Greetings, friends, and welcome to a big 75th episode of the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast, where each episode we rappel into a roguelike game filled with traps and terrors, steal the Golden Review statue head, and escape with treasure in tow to revisit it at the end of the year in our end of season recap deathmatch mode, if the score's high enough. I am your derpy pug host of the podcast, Scott Berger. And with me are my fellow spelunkers.
Well, howdy, kid. This is Andrew Harshman, but this episode you can call me Wisconsin Johnson at your service.
And this is Colin. I'm a skeleton on the floor that sometimes pops up.
Hello, and I'm the resident lunkhead, Woody Siskowski.
That's right. This is a guest star episode. We got Woody with us to tell us all that we need to know about.
Yeah, we had to bring in the heavy plasma cannons for this one, for a highly requested listener request week, also 75th episode and a listener request week, doubling up with, if you didn't check the title of the episode before downloading it, Spelunky, released in 2008 ? Oof. As a freeware game, December 21st, 2008, if you could believe it. But we're playing the remaster version that debuted on the, ask your grandparents, the Xbox Live Arcade, July 4th, 2012. And then coming to Steam a year later in August 2013, and then PlayStation 2013, and finally a Switch in 2021.
Wait, so you're saying that for 4th of July, if I'm not feeling particularly patriotic, I can just celebrate the anniversary of Spelunky?
Yes, exactly.
Wonderful.
It feels like the 4th of July.
Yep.
This was made, developed and published by the, I think it's easy to say now, legendary Moss Mouth, which at the time was a whopping three people. The legendary and award-winning at that time, as well.
Did they take away his awards?
Well, I mean, no, but like Derek Yu.
Well, yeah, they took them and they put them in this underground installation.
Got it.
Sort of a temple of sorts.
But we have a kind of an all-star cast here well, I mean, if you can call three people an all-star cast, Derek Yu, who just won the Indie Game Fest grand prize with a game called Aquaria the year before Spelunky 2008's release. Andy Hull, who is a programmer friend of Derek's, and Eric Shirk, I guarantee I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but a legendary chiptune artist, all came together for this Xbox Live release. And then Moss Mouth then put out Spelunky 2 in 2020, September 29th, 2020. And most recently, if you can believe it, a stay tuned and a half for this program. I won't torture you guys with this coming up next week, but UFO 50. It was worth the wait, September 18th, 2024. More on that to come at some point. But
yeah, but UFO 50 isn't part of the Spelunky canon, right? It's just another high quality Derek Yu project.
I don't know if you count Campanella 2 as in that canon, but anyway, tune in to our UFO 50 episode when we eventually do it. Spelunky, your average player of Spelunky has about 33 hours of gameplay in it, and surprisingly, Spelunky climbs the rope of our Steam popularity rankings at the 81st most popular roguelike game on Steam with 16,349 total reviews. Woody, what is your one sentence journal entry description for what one does in this legendary roguelike platformer?
All right. Explore procedurally generated caves. Watch out for spikes.
Yeah. That's and how many exclamation marks do you put on that sentence?
Yeah.
As yeah, many as the, possible.
Yeah, yeah, this is a real more than the sum of its parts type of game. Where like it is composed of essentially the simplest possible premise and one of the best executions. Like this is a game with very little flash and a lot of substance.
Yeah, and I think that like this game, 100%, I agree on that on all fronts. It like there's maybe a trap with roguelike games nowadays,
many actually.
yeah, some shoot arrows, some of them shoot spikes.
With scope creep, where like, oh, like let's build a game that's like this very systems heavy thing, and let's just cram more and more shit into it until it becomes net hack, and it's just become this incomprehensible nightmare of like Sokoban levels. And sure, let's just like have like all these other like things going on. I think like in terms of scope and like something that is like scoped to something that's just like, this is the game, this is its scope, I think Spelunky just slam dunks it on what it is, what it achieves, and what it does with like the parts that it has, which isn't a whole lot, which we'll probably get into.
So I'm gonna throw out like a thesis, an opening paragraph. You know how teachers, they tell you like start your opening and then you work forward and then you restate. So I hope that by the end of this podcast, we'll revisit this question. I think that you could make like an argument that Spelunky is one of like the definitive video games, just like period. Hmm. Like if you were to give somebody, like if someone was like, I want to know what video games are, give me 5 video games to play that are representative of everything that video games are and can do, I think you could cover a lot of ground giving them a copy of Spelunky.
So here's maybe a pivoting question off of that for you, Woody. Would you consider Spelunky like maybe not the, but like one of the top 3 to 5 like standard bearers of all of roguelike games?
Yes, I would, except I mean, I'm sure this is true for a lot of your listeners, and you know, like I don't think that my knowledge of roguelike games doesn't date back to, you know, the 80s when like Rogue was a game on PC. Like this is one of the earliest games that I played that had procedurally generated levels.
I think that there's basically like the new generation of,
right,
or the new renaissance starts in 2000,
if you will.
Exactly. Starts in 2007-ish.
Right.
Feel like
about the time that original Spelunky came out.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the 2007 to 2012 period had a lot of the foundational games that people built on, whether or not they were good, which we might have a strong disagreement this one, but
that's fine.
But I won't disagree that this was absolutely foundational and influential on so many other games that came out.
I think it's important to stage set a little for like where was the state of rogue games in like the early 2000s? Because if we're comparing like 2008 Spelunky and why it was so influential, like this is your list of like most influential roguelike games at the time. Like we're not even talking rogue lights. Like that's not even a twinkle in roguedom's eye yet. We're talking like the biggest release through this decade is like up to 2004 is like maybe Doom the roguelike. So like lots of free open source software stuff. Like the next year comes out Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, Red Blue Rescue Team, a Stay Tuned and a Half, which like you could argue that Mystery Dungeon games are maybe their own thing, but I feel like it's close enough to procedurally generated stuff, and it sold like, I don't know, 6 million copies or something. Like you really can't ignore that level of legacy, but it's a turn-based, very slow, very grindy RPG type game. That same year you have Fate, usually in all caps, that comes out, which is like, it's like a crappy like Diablo at home game for kids that like people have strong nostalgia for. I played the remastered version at PAX, was not impressed. The next year, 2006, you have Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup coming out, which potentially is Stay Tuned. 2006 also marks the age of the first release of Slaves to Armok 2, Dwarf Fortress.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Also, the first roguelike game ever on Steam that everyone knows called Uplink. 2007 has Pokemon Mystery Dungeon's sequel, Explorers of Time / Darkness, that comes out. And then 2008, Spelunky lands on the scene, and it's like, oh, shit, I didn't think that like you could actually take mechanics from these rogue games and put them into something real-time since, I don't know, what, like, Toe Jam and Earl, like, 93? Like that's how big of a gulf it's
Yeah, but
like.
Toe Jam and Earl is not a game that like asks you for precision. Like
No.
that is, you know what I mean? Like it's not a turn-based, menu-based game, but you're essentially walking around a isometric world, like not without any real combat.
Right. And like this kind of, and so like this is 2008. It's like blowing up because it's a freeware game. And between 2008 and Spelunky's PC release, we have Binding of Isaac releasing in 2011, FTL 2012, Rogue Legacy comes out, let's see, June 2013, and then Spelunky HD on Steam comes out August 2013. So technically, I guess like Spelunky HD comes out on Xbox Live Arcade sometime before Rogue Legacy.
Yeah.
And I actually don't remember if Rogue Legacy came out on Xbox Live Arcade, but Rogue Legacy comes out like, let's round it up, a year later. And I feel like Rogue Legacy has just kind of like eaten Spelunky's lunch, maybe?
Well, I agree in some ways, except I think Spelunky was just in a different lunch line. I think that Spelunky was in, you know, came out and people were like, "Oh, this is great." You know, Spelunky HD, you know, really clicked. It's a great game. But I think that some people like, you know, it's a game with a lot of friction in the sense that you can boot up Spelunky and you could be dead within 30 seconds. Which is, you know, for people who aren't, that is not a selling point. They might just be like, you know what? I've played this game for 4 minutes and I've died 5 times, so I'm just not gonna play this game. And I think Rogue Legacy,
I bounced off it pretty hard, and I was looking at it, and I was like, all right, I have an average runtime of 3 minutes.
and so
And
you
like
bounced off it
I have
into an
22 deaths
explosion.
in like an hour and 10 minutes.
Ooh,
I'm
that's
like,
some good spelunk
this
in
is
there.
like rough.
No, and that sounds right. And I think that Rogue Legacy was the game that said, hey, Spelunky's doing a lot of super cool stuff in terms of integrating like procedurally generated rogue mechanics into a retro platformer. Let's steal that idea and add, you know, what, you know, is now rogue light mechanics, where you have this,
Like progression systems.
yeah, well, what's the term of like advantages that carry over from run to run?
Progression, right? Or like a
Meta-progression.
meta progression.
Yeah,
That's
those
it.
are, yeah, right.
And I think that the things that Rogue Legacy did of having this meta progression, other games sort of built on that, because they're like, oh, now we don't have to worry about, like, Hades is a great example of this, because like Hades is a great game and it is a very difficult game, as is like Dead Cells, but because they have these elements of meta progression, they can leave the game as difficult as they want it to be, but if you keep playing it, you will beat the game. Like Spelunky has none of that. There is no natural element to Spelunky that makes a run that you do 10 hours in naturally easier than the run you do when you first boot up the game.
Save for your own muscle memory
Well,
and
exactly,
raw
yeah.
skills.
And that's part of my argument of why this is one of the definitive video games. Because like, is there any game that has made like a better case for you just getting better at the game?
Dark
But it,
Souls. I mean, I feel like this is
but
when I've been thinking about it's as like, oh, this is, I put it in the same like Venn diagram cluster as the Dark Souls types games, where it's just one of the goals of the game is to increase your personal skill level at it. And like
Well,
that
I
is the
guess
main
also,
measure of progression. And
well,
this
the
came out well before, well,
it
this
came
came out
out
before
just
Dark
before
Souls.
Demon Souls. Demon's Souls came out, well, I'm not sure if it came out in Japan in 2009 or in the US, but around this time.
But it felt like
So
that era of gaming
and the reason
felt
I know
very.
that is that I just looked it up because I'm curious, like, hey, when all this was happening, what games was I playing? Because I wasn't really playing many roguelikes. I was playing like Left 4 Dead 2, Uncharted 2, Infamous, Demon's Souls. Anyway, sorry, I know this is going back a ways. When did the actual popular version of this game come out? When did everyone play it?
2012. Yeah,
2012.
2012 on
Okay.
Xbox
Xbox
Live
Live
Arcade.
Arcade.
And
I
then this game
see.
had a weirdly super, like, Spelunky HD, which is pretty much, I think, when you space Spelunky, this is where people's mind would go to was Spelunky HD.
Right.
Like, the Switch version of Spelunky HD didn't come out until, like, 2020. Like, wow. This game has a super timeless quality to it. Like, if Spelunky 2 didn't, like, if there was never a Spelunky game up to this point, and then Spelunky HD came out this year, like, I still think it would totally be its own super cool kind of revolutionary thing.
And I think it kind of comes with this wave of, like, hard games are cool again with, sure, I've never played it, but Woody, I'm sure you've played I Want to Be the Guy.
Yeah.
Between that or like Super Meat Boy and Demon Souls, Dark Souls, it was like, oh, like, you're not cool until, like, you've beaten Dark Souls.
Just a couple of things on that. I think that I Want to Be the Guy, for example, is its own kind of other genre, because that is a game that is deliberately designed to hit you with cheap deaths as, like, a joke.
Like Kaizo Mario.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing, but it's like, hey, we're going to require a level of precision that is sort of beyond what any reasonable player can expect. and I don't think that Spelunky goes there.
I'm not convinced that Spelunky isn't that far off at times, but I get what you're saying.
And the other thing,
designed from the ground up to do that.
To chime in on, I do think that the Dark Souls comparison is reasonable, but to me, the difference maker is, I remember being frustrated in the original Demon's Souls and then looking up builds of, like, oh, this is an effective weapon to use based on its stats. And then I just built around that weapon, and then I cruised through the rest of the game. Like, Spelunky, you can look up what some items do, but you can't really look up
how
you
to
know,
be good at it.
Yeah, to some extent. And even, like, enemy patterns are just much more, I don't know, things feel much more bare bones in Spelunky. Like, there's so many elements of Dark Souls that, or, you know, just games in general, where I always wonder, like, am I getting better at the game, or am I simply memorizing the challenges that the game is throwing at me because it's the same every time?
Right.
Whereas I feel like in Spelunky, you just kind of have to just be getting better at the game.
Indeed. Yeah. Unlike a traditional platformer, like a classic Mario or, I don't know, Mega Man, let's say, Battletoads.
Sure.
You cannot memorize the level critically, right, because it's randomized. You can't, you know, figure out, oh, you know, I'm going to do this jump in this way, and I'm going to utilize this item, and you know, just sort of go through the level by memory until you get to a new part or the part that has, you know, been challenging you. It is, I wasn't sure how I felt about that at
first. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, there can be some procedural bullshit. Like, I was doing a run where there was an arrow trap that was pointing directly at a store, like a store. So if I drop down to go to the store, that arrow trap trigger was going to trigger. Yeah, so I'm like, oh, I'll just drop a rope. And so I just dropped the rope down there. It shot the arrow into the store, and then the shopkeeper went nuts and just destroyed me, because that's what they do. And I was like, hey, that seems
It was your fault that he got shot with the arrow. So
no, it was 100% my fault. And that's what I realized. Like, first I was bitter that, like, oh, I can't believe an arrow trap spawned right there. They shouldn't let that happen. But, like, I should have known that that was gonna happen. And then I had a choice, which is, just don't go to that shop. Just go around the other way, which is, you know, the kind of choice that you face in a roguelike all the time. Like, that's what roguelikes are built on, is this idea of how much do I want to risk in this run, or do I just want to bypass it? So as far as, I should have just recognized that as, oh, that is just not a shop that I want to go to.
You could also, or, like, blow up the arrow trap from, like,
that could have worked. Or I could have jumped down in front of it and taken, you know, use my body as a shield.
Get down, Mr. President.
Yeah.
So I have a, before we get too far into this episode,
sure,
could one of you guys who has played this game significantly further into completion than I have, just give me a rundown of, like, what are you, just a run through a run for me, because I will say I bounced off this game pretty hard. I never made it past the mines.
Yeah, no.
Round two, you bounced off it into an explosion, into a spike trap. Am I right, folks?
There's a whole page on the Spelunky Wiki called Yet Another Stupid Death that is like, you know, it's like, it's just an endless scroll of people describing all of the different ways they died in Spelunky.
All the wacky Looney Tunes tomfoolery.
Before we jump, you said, Scott,
that this game is secretly a pinball game?
I mean, yeah, it feels like the ball
being your ragdolling corpse or, a sprite.
Your health pool being your strokes. I think, like, before we jump into it, like, an example run, I do want to touch real quick on, like, the intro and tutorial, because I think that, like, this game does really well with, like, setting the stage where, like, you boot up the game the first time. The graphics, I think, in this game are excellent, where, like, normally I'm really not a fan of, like, kind of cartoony looking design like this, but I think the art here is really, really good. And it works really well for, like, the theme of the game being, like, an Indiana Jones simulator, where, like, you boot up the game and, you know, your Spelunker, your Indiana Jones non-copyright infringing character is walking through the desert and comes to this big, big cave. You drop a rope down and there's like, a big door, but it's locked. Oh, no. And you're effectively forced to go through the tutorial sequence, which kind of sucks if you have your save lost.
Yeah, it's crazy. This game doesn't have cloud save on PC.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. But I will say, like, jumping into this on my Steam Deck, I was like, I got to go through the tutorial again. Well, fine, let's do it. And I remember, like, being pretty well educated, and, like, the little journal pops up, and it's the explorer Yang who has left you this journal with all of his tips of, like, oh, this, you know, here's how to survive in the dungeon and everything. And you go through, like, basically an example, like, run of the mines. It's very easy, and it has all of, like, these enormous billboards in the background that I think are very cute, of, like, stick figures jumping with the buttons and stuff. But there's also, like, very subtle game mechanics sprinkled in there, like with like a row of spikes and a gem behind it, and you're like, I'm not gonna jump on the spikes to get the gem. Clearly that's a trap. But if you, like, fall off to the side, you can walk through the spikes to get the gem. It's not explicitly spelled out, but if it's one of those things that you just happen to stumble across, you're just like,
too subtle for some players.
I didn't get that.
And critically, this is all being presented, of course, in game. You're playing it, and it is, of course, a platformer, a side-scrolling platformer, for anyone who happens to not know what we're talking about.
Yeah, but it teaches you stuff like, here's how to use the whip to open boxes. Here's how to, like, plant a bomb down instead of throwing it. Here's how to, like, do running jumps and run over pits at full speed. And then Yang's journal goes on to say, all right, you're on your own adventure. Like, go out and seek the gold. And then the key to the entrance of the mines blows open in this big blue explosion. And you start your first run into the mines.
So
immediately ends very quickly. You start with 4 health, and everything in this procedurally generated level is out to murderize you, including gravity, especially gravity.
And I would say, like, the most telling thing in this game, probably the thing that's, you know, pushes people away immediately, is the arrow traps, which are on the first level, and they're these, like, little gargoyle heads, and they're kind of hard to notice at first because they are just blocks in the wall, and when you jump in front of them, like, even a fair distance away, they will shoot this high speed crossbow bolt that just, like, pierces your character and deals you, I think, 3 damage.
It's 2 damage.
It's 2 damage.
It's like 50% of your starting health with one hit, and you're just in theory, if, like, you bounce off of that and fall down a pit, there goes another health, and then,
or if you get shot, launched into an enemy. Damage has a tendency to combo in this game
for sure.
I think you've really touched on something important, Woody, here. The arrow traps, which are present all the way up until the fourth biome, off and on, if I'm not mistaken. They do show up in the fourth level.
And then the fourth level, you also get magma pits with guys that jump out of the magma.
Magma pits and mummies. And let's not forget the strange blocks that will instagib you.
All sorts of chase after
the
you.
Magnet blocks.
Wonderful. I guess, like, but with regards to the arrow traps, sorry, let's stick with the arrow traps for a moment. They are, so the tile that is used, this is of course a tile-based, you know, platforming game. The tile and the texture that's used for the arrow trap is very similar to another tile, which is just a regular stone block. The difference being is there's sort of like an artistic rendition of like
a
face.
That regular stone block, like there's the brown sort of, you know, normal landscape, but then there is the stone blocks that will fall. Like the brown
yes.
blocks will stay in the air and the stone blocks will fall. So many a time I have gotten the mattock, a tool that allows you to dig, and I have been digging my way horizontally through, and you know, mostly it's harmless, and then you dig your way under a stone block and you keep walking forward and that just falls and crushes you.
One of the few times I laughed when I died in this game was when I got crushed by one of those blocks. But the point is that these arrow traps, I've been playing this game for 24 hours.
That's
out
right.
of the 2 weeks we've been playing this game, I spent an entire day playing it. I am still running into these arrow traps because they are well camouflaged, and you have talk about cognitive load. This is in some part a memory game.
Sure.
A very difficult and not at all lenient memory
but
game. You need to remember how does the arrow trap work? How do these different enemies behave? How do the large stone blocks work? What is the behavior of everything in the terrain?
But that to me is what is interesting about this game, because there are
so
many games
it's
when you go
very
back
difficult
to like a retro aesthetic, like. There's so many games that are memory game, like, you know, Punch Out is a memory game because you can memorize the patterns. Here, Spelunky, it can't be a memorization game because the things are randomized. So you have to stay. It's essentially a game that prevents you from resting on your laurels and prevents you from playing lazily. You can't have played so many hours of Spelunky that you just like cruise through unconsciously, because you
unless you're
always
a speedrunner.
Well, sure, but even that, it's like there are speedrunners of, you know, tons of games who can play those games with their eyes closed.
Sure.
And like that's not a joke. Like they literally, like there's footage of people just, you know, beating Mike Tyson with their eyes closed.
Blindfolded Dark Souls runs.
Yeah, you're never gonna find a speedrunner for Spelunky who can beat it with their eyes closed.
But you can find a speedrunner who can beat it with the Donkey Kong bongo drums.
Yeah.
It's funny you should mention that.
That is what is cool about Spelunky, is that it is a game that as you keep playing it, you just are forced to stay engaged the whole time. It has that level of tension, whereas if you want to play games, in like so many times I will fall back on like a comfort game. Like, in some ways, like, Enter the Gungeon is a comfort game with me, another game that, you know, we've been on, that I was on, because, like, even though, like, the locations of treasure chests and stuff are randomized, like, the game pretty much feels the same each time you play it. And, like, I know how each enemy reacts and things like that, and it just feels way more forgiving than Spelunky, which is just, you know, if I don't pay attention for a little bit, I just get annihilated. I'm very pro Spelunky, but you certainly have to be in a certain mood for it. And like, to demonstrate that, I was playing this game a lot on my Steam Deck to prepare for this, and I kept dying, like, which is classic. Like, I have beaten this game by going through Hell, which is like the alternate path, hard mode path. That was many years ago, and I'm like, oh yeah, I should be able to get Spelunky, no problem. And then I was playing on the Steam Deck, and I just kept dying in that first those caves. And then I played on my PC, and I just beat it through the first run. And I think that like part of that is that when I'm playing on my Steam Deck and I'm laying in bed, like I just don't have that same sort of level of focus that I have sitting on an uncomfortable chair, like looking at my laptop. Especially because like Spelunky is such a vertically oriented game, and like the Steam Deck is naturally like a big wide horizontal screen. But I just feel like that was demonstrative of like, if you want to play Spelunky, like you just have to pay attention. Like, you just kind of have
Too
to just be
true.
conscious of what is around you at all times and not sort of get complacent. And I think that I don't know. And obviously, it's like difficulty is just a matter of degrees. And so, what is comfortable for someone might be off-putting for other people. And like, I feel like Spelunky is pretty much the right difficulty. But that's not to say there's not some
For
BS.
who? For
Well,
Woody?
I mean,
Well,
for me, but that's the
okay.
question of like, if you. I mean, what would this game be if you played it and beat it in the first run? Like, I
A
mean,
completely different game.
what do you, Colin and Andrew, like, what do you guys want from your time starting to play this game? Like, how many deaths is reasonable before you say, you know, screw this, I'm gonna go play something else?
Well, I can tell you because I just looked it up. I have 24 hours in this game, 260 deaths,
Nice.
Sure.
folks, which I mean was kind of surprising, but now that I've sat with that number for a little bit, it's not that surprising. I don't think I've reached that critical mass yet. I'm willing to keep at this game. I think the furthest I got was I've been to Biome 4 a fair bit. I think the furthest I got was like level 2, definitely, maybe level 3 of Biome 4.
Yeah, you're
And
almost there. I mean,
so thank you.
Andrew, are
Going
you
back
having
to
fun playing it? Because it
that is
seemed
a
like
great question.
you weren't liking it very much when we started, and yet you're still
So
24
it
hours
has
in,
been
so.
just up and down, a wild roller coaster with this game, let me tell you. But I tell you what, am I having fun? Do I like this game? Do I hate this game? I'm not totally sure, but I can tell you someone's opinion who has been officially declared in this quote from my wife, quote, "Tell them your wife says she hates Spelunky. Never played it, but hates it based on how mad it makes you." Now, this is a frustrating game. It can be a
That's
frustrating
very good.
experience.
I'm not going to pretend that this is not a frustrating game. You would
Hey,
have
but
to be trolling to claim Spelunky is not frustrating.
in yes, I tend to agree. So yeah, to be clear, I haven't destroyed anything. I haven't gone off the handle, but I have been cursing up a storm, and I have been saying some not nice things about the game. Maybe not directly to the designers, but the game itself. At times, it has felt like this game is out to get me.
Yeah, I mean,
And
it is.
I that is thank you. It's good to hear that I'm not the only one who feels that way at times. I have another quote from my wife here that I just want to toss in real quick. Wow, that is a terrible whip. I was describing to her how god awful the starting weapon is in this game. And now, listeners, imagine, if you will, the Castlevania whip with all of its weird timing and sort of odd hit registration, but reduce the range to, oh, I don't know, maybe what, the length of an extended index finger, the length of I don't know, a yardstick, not even a yardstick. This is a piss poor starting weapon.
Sure.
And I think it is representative of a number of piss poor things that this game gives you. Piss poor amount of bombs, piss poor amount of ropes, piss poor amount of health. And if
Sure.
any of these knobs were just adjusted just up a little bit, the game would be so much
I
easier.
feel
And
like
I
I,
understand this is all very intentional design,
yeah.
but like, golly, in the tutorial, I thought, well, great, I'm just gonna be like bombing and roping my way through these levels. It's gonna be fun. This is gonna be awesome. Oh, no. Absolutely not. You gotta work for
Would
them
it be
bombs. You gotta
nice
work for them ropes. You gotta work for those items.
to have like just in the option menu the ability to just modify, you know, your
I
starting
think it
rope,
would.
starting bomb, starting health? Like, would
I would
that have
have
given you a better way to explore the mechanics of the game?
I
Great
will agree with
question.
Andrew that I hate the whip. I hate how slow it is.
Yeah, whip
Like
sucks.
the whip sucks and it feels bad to use it.
But if
the whip
the
was just a slight bit faster, I don't the range, I can deal with the range being low, but the number of times in the, 2 hours that I played this game that I just like ran into an enemy because I expected the whip to have hit them by the time I got to them is like pretty high.
It's also, this game has a lot of flying enemies. Like the bats are pretty tough, and the whip has essentially no upward arc to it. And so it is not
Again,
useless. I mean,
Castlevania.
my advice to you regarding that is don't use the whip. Just it's kind of a last resort thing. I for the
Jumping,
most part,
you have to get another weapon though.
no, you
Like,
just jump on dudes.
right, you got a Super Mario Brothers it.
Yeah,
Or
you Super Mario Brothers
crucially,
it, or
maybe that was the thing that I was missing that
yeah, I would
just
definitely recommend jumping on dudes. And more, another piece of advice is like you can also ignore dudes. Like this game, I
very
think, has a
true.
nice balance of incentivizing you to explore a little bit, but like the more bogged down you get in exploring, you still risk triggering more traps. And so I usually have pretty successful runs just kind of like heading for the exit ASAP. And like the levels aren't that big in this game. I want to go back a little bit because Colin very thoughtfully asked a question about the progression of this game, and then
Of
we moved
course,
forward.
yes, good memory.
So Scott, walked us through the tutorial. And from a gameplay perspective, Colin, like what you saw in the first biome is the game. Like there
Okay.
is not some kind of like big switch in the second and third biome where like mechanically they give you a mech suit and then you just start blasting missiles at everything.
It becomes a Pokemon RPG and then a card game at the very end and
Exactly. It's kind of the level feel changes a little bit. Like the second world biome, which I think is maybe the hardest biome, is a jungle. And there are many
Well,
more traps
we need to
and
talk about that later. Yeah, but do continue.
Monsters, monsters hanging around, like monkeys jump on you and
Man-eating piranha
mine-eating
plants.
piranhas. That has a slightly more horizontal feel, but not much. And then there's, dudes with boomerangs who chuck at you. All of these biomes have like secret levels that you can get to. This game has a pretty good amount of, or I think a healthy, well-balanced amount of like secret content. But like the core path through the game is not very long. The third level is the Yeti Caves, which is probably the most. Oh, there goes Colin. He was just like, no more of this. I'm sick of you talking about Spelunky.
Ice caves, you mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, Yetis live in the ice caves.
Yeti
Yeah,
caves, I'm
but
out of
well,
here. The Yeti caves specifically are like one of the offshoot branches where, or I guess like is it that's one of the level feelings, right? Where like you have
oh,
like the actual
sure.
Yetis in, or like the Yeti King, I guess,
Yeah, that's
specifically.
the Yeti. All the ice levels have Yetis in them, but there's this thing called level feelings where you're at the start of the level. Like the most common one you get is like, I can't see a thing in here, and then the level's dark, which I also think is kind of BS.
Boy, oh boy.
I am not a big fan of that because even if you survive those levels, like they're just not that fun. It's not that fun to run around without being able to see anything that's going on.
So
Yeah, I
check it out. The
mean,
thing with the dark levels, the lights out levels, is that it gives you a torch, and the torch gives you a view radius that is, I don't know, approximately half the screen, but not
yeah,
the whole screen.
it's quite limited.
It is extremely limited. If you drop the torch, then it is like half of that,
Yeah.
and it's basically a death sentence.
And you only have one item carry slot.
Precisely,
And
precisely. I had a very promising run happening. My final run leading up to this recording. I started from the very beginning and I was working my way through. I got to the first level of the temple. I had a shotgun. I had bombs. I had equipment. I was loaded for bear. And the RNG drops me into temple level one. Hey, it's awfully dark in here.
yeah.
Turned out the lights. Death sentence. Absolutely. I didn't stand a chance. Anyway,
Right.
yeah, so there's and I mean that is an example. I mean the lights being out and the torch mechanics, while challenging, is
interesting. And this game does a lot of cool stuff with, you know, taking its core mechanics and adding on different modifiers and changes and making each run feel unique, which is great, but sometimes to your detriment.
Well, there's a lot of like interlocking pieces with how little there is here too, compared to like that we're so spoiled for games like Noita or Binding of Isaac that's like now with over 5 million items or something. Yeah. And this game has like, I don't know, 30 question mark, but like the ice caves notably have like, I think like these very well artistically designed like ice blocks that, shocker, when you walk on them, like you slide a little bit. But if you have the spike boots that you can buy from a shopkeep that do more damage when you Mario jump on dudes' heads, those will give you grip on the ice blocks to like walk around in. And maybe it's a thing that like we just kind of take for granted in every road game nowadays, but like it feels like basically everything in the game has some other way of interacting with all the other elements like that, which feels...
Well, it just all interacts in a super intuitive way. Like, this is what I've been thinking... Like, this is the thing that I enjoy the most about game design. And, like, another game that I've talked about on this podcast is Into the Breach, which I think is a game that really does this too, is where games are uniform in their mechanics... and everything has this level of intuitiveness. Like, so like, if you think about the game of, I don't know, if you think about football, like American football is an example. It's like someone comes up with a sport. It's like, okay, what's the idea of the sport? Well, you have to get, you know, you have to advance the football from one side of the field to the other, and the other team's trying to stop you. And you say, okay, great, that's a simple premise, no problem, we'll do that. And they're like, oh, wait a second, we have to, like, try and figure out ways to make this fair. And it's like, you can't tackle a guy unless he has the ball. And you can't, but, like, you can't, have to line up in a certain way, because it's like, there's all these sort of extra things.
And then you have ineligible downfield receivers of the offensive line.
Sometimes you can kick the ball.
Yeah, sometimes you can kick, but not always. And not it's always. Like these.
Sometimes you can throw it forward, but not always.
And it's like all of these ideas of you've started with this really simple premise, but you have to keep adding junk to try and make it a fair and exciting game. And like what Spelunky I love about soccer. Spelunky is they're like, you go into a cave and there's things you can buy and there's treasure you can get. And like, that's it. Like, this game doesn't feel like it has elements to it that exist solely to balance the game.
Soccer's too elegant. This is like the rugby of games, where like you're just being pummeled constantly. Like, you're falling down on the ground. There's all sorts of arms and things grabbing in places.
Rugby's got a ton of rules. Like, this, like, this to me is just like,
all right, this is like a back alley. This is street rugby.
It's
underground,
like,
rugby.
Everything here seems to work in such an intuitive way. Like, the shopkeeper is selling stuff. You can, you know, steal from the shopkeeper, but that is going to tick him off.
All right, we got to talk about the shopkeeper some more. Check it out. This is the most vindictive shopkeep ever. Enter the Gungeon, you know, even like from a character design perspective, these dudes look similar. They've got facial hair. They're a little portly. They get a little bit angry if you start shooting up the place or if you start acting a fool. This shopkeep goes ballistic. And if any damage is dealt to him by any source in the level, he is aggroed to you. And forevermore.
Or his shop.
Tells all his shopkeep friends. So even
he tells all of his clones, all of the T-1000s.
His clones.
And he's got a shotgun and he absolutely will not stop until you are dead.
And then they
he falls on a spike trap and you can pick up his stuff.
All of the clones will then hang out at the exit for the next five or so levels.
It's wild.
It's pretty wild. I mean, it's a real risk reward versus situation. Every so often,
I never defeated the shopkeep.
Yeah.
If you do,
you have.
If you have defeated him in his multiple iterations, do you just get the shop? Do the shop still generate the next levels? Yeah.
Except that he's
so you can
pissed
just get
off
their stuff.
And wants to kill you.
Well, yeah, but sure, there's infinite shopkeeps. Like Andrew said, they're clones. So the shops will generate in the next level. But as soon as you get next to it, that shopkeeper will just aggro you immediately because you killed his original.
And when we were talking about a pinball game before, this is like like Sonic Spinball levels of like sickening bouncing all around the level at like comically turbo speed. They have wall hacks. They have aimbots. They have 10 HP, where I was thinking 10? Like they
I
have
didn't
10
realize
HP.
It was 10.
But like again, they're perfectly susceptible to the same things you are, including right. spike traps, web traps, bombs, like freeze rays, telefragging even. Despite how like wildly overpowered they are, there's also like a way
and
to
it should be noted that this is another point for Spelunky as a true roguelike, because the creatures and the enemies, the NPCs in the game, operate more or less with the same rules as the player character.
Yeah. And like notably, there is a way to de-aggro them that's basically impossible, for like to exit the level without being seen by one.
Oh,
I mean, good luck, like Metal
oh,
Gear Solid style. But
yeah, except they hang out at the exit, so
right.
like that is really really hard.
And again, if there was like an item, I don't know, like in like one of the Egyptian artifact items that we'll get to in a minute, like if there was one of those that like you could activate to go invisible for 2 seconds, like that could be a way to like play with that system a little. But I think it's probably fine, because like,
oh, it's fine. It's just it's very interesting. It's something that I've not seen in a game before, like a network of shopkeeps that are so vindictive. In Enter the Gungeon, he just closes the shop. He says, right. "Well, fine, you can't buy stuff." He doesn't go medieval on your ass
for the rest of the game.
For the rest of yeah. the yeah, for all time, unless you do that one specific thing you mentioned. That's
like,
interesting, Scott.
As like deadly as like the Anubis god or something, just
and,
about. But
and check it out. If you like blow something up in a level, or you set off like a big giant boulder trap, which
yep.
could potentially aggro the shopkeep.
Yeah.
It is the worst feeling in the world. You activate one of those and then hear the aggro music for the shopkeep. Which all the music's great, but oh man, that is not a good.
You're gonna be hearing that music a lot,
quite possibly.
Yeah, I guess in some ways, like it's kind of odd that my general advice for this game is like try not to engage with all. Like, if you want to get far, like don't overly engage with those systems. Like, if you see a shopkeep and he's selling like one item you want, go ahead and buy it. If you see the thing that triggers a giant boulder and it's right by the exit, go ahead and take it and get out of there. But like, if it is not, then just ignore it, because it's going to trigger a bunch of bad things that happen.
And go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just think that like at its core, this game just has like an incredible sort of cleanness to it. Like, just this sense of like everything that is in this game is in there for a reason, and like makes the game more fun. There is not something that like comes up and I'm like, oh, I can't believe that. Like an item, I guess specifically an item.
Except like, the crush traps.
Yeah. Well, some there's plenty of traps and stuff that do not make the game more fun. but it, yeah, like Andrew said, there's a real feeling of like intentional design. There's not a feeling of like, oh crap, we have to come up with 100 more items for this game. Everyone get to the drawing board and just like think of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like what fits into this system. And to me, like that comes back to my original premise of like Spelunky is a definitive video game, because it is just sort of platforming at its most basic. Like even Super Mario Brothers, it's like, oh, you can go into this pipe, but you can't go into these pipes. And it's like, well, why can I go into that pipe? It's like, I don't know. You just can. Like Spelunky hardly has any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So continuing with our standard run, you know, you go through the mines, you go through the jungle, you go through the caves, you get to the temple, the final level, and you're
just
jumping
sort of
over
a evil obsidian Egyptian death temple of sorts.
Yeah.
Insofar as it's filled with death traps.
Yeah, it's got your standard ancient Egyptian things like mummies,
mummies that
traps.
Shoot bees at you.
Bees.
Yeah. croc men, magma men, and Anubis, of course.
Of course.
Who has a projectile that is very slow, but it goes through walls. I believe it follows you around.
It definitely follows you.
And it deals 5 damage, which is almost assuredly an insta-kill.
Yep. It's very unreasonable.
But if you have
sticky bombs, if you have a pitcher's mitt, you can sit all the way on the other side of the screen, maybe even off screen, and just huck sticky bombs at Anubis from almost off screen and just nuke them. And,
oh, sure. Yeah. To be like, clear,
sticky bombs are very clutch to get a good run. And this game is luckily fairly generous with the big spider enemy. And like, usually I'm very anti big spider enemies in games because ick. But like, this big spider, like he sit, as long as you don't run under him, you don't trigger his aggro, and he sits right above 2 spider webs that will catch your bombs. So you just chuck a bomb in there and it blows him up, and then you can get his sticky webbing, which is super sweet.
And so to Andrew's point, I think that there are like elements that feel like in a silo feel like wildly overpowered and imbalanced.
But
I think the game is expecting you, the player, to become wildly overpowered and imbalanced to balance out that aspect.
Like, and isn't that like the heart of a like that's like FTL, right?
Yeah, like, that's like
the ship at the end of FTL is unbelievably overpowered.
Yeah.
But like the hope is by that time you have accrued so much kit that you can take it on. And like that is what I like. I mean, there's something I really like about Spelunky is it combines this idea, like the joy of accruing loot that and like feeling very powerful in a roguelike with a sort of just like bare bones, you feel like you're good at video games type of vibe.
But yeah, your standard run continues through the temple. You beat Anubis, maybe, or you smartly run past him.
What's funny is if you kill Anubis, speaking of things playing by the same rules, you can pick up his staff. And then you're like, awesome, I can shoot like psychic beams at enemies and it follows them. Except it goes super slow and you shoot one out in front of you and then you just run forward and you run into it and it kills you. Like even the own gun that you shoot will still kill you. So it is very much a worthless weapon, even though it is cool that it's there.
Yeah.
Does Anubis chase you?
Very slowly.
Okay.
It's easy enough to run away from his little purple circle attacks that
I guess the better question is, you can't make Anubis run into his own bullet, though, right?
No, you can't.
No,
that would have been cool.
Rip.
What if you like circle back around him and the bullet?
It does not affect him, and I think you've brought up a good point.
And like you know, yeah,
they
you
need
can
to patch
run
this game.
You can run past him. You can blow him up. You can try to go around him. But I mean, sometimes you've gotten this far in the run, and maybe you're running low on resources, and it's like things start compounding. It's like, well, Anubis in isolation, manageable. Anubis in a room full of traps, Anubis in a room with some other enemies.
But you guys have a roguelike podcast. You've done 75 episodes of it. Like, isn't the idea of like running low on stuff and like RNG dealing you dumb bullshit, like, isn't that like what
that's where the drama comes in.
Yeah.
You're right. You're absolutely
correct.
Like
and the
I'm
heart
not trying
of the
to
roguelike.
Say that Anubis is unfair per se. I'm just trying to highlight, like, yo, by the time you get to the end of this game, you are feeling the heat.
Yes.
Like you thought everything was trying to kill you in the mines. That ain't nothing. That's kids play. Welcome to the temple of your demise.
Yeah.
What happens after the temple?
The temple is very much like when I get to the temple, I am just like, I'm booking it for the exit. I don't care what else is around here. Like, I'm just getting out of here. And the temple is the last world. So world 4-4. Well, okay. The temple is the last world in a standard run.
Right.
You can go through this intricate series of like getting a special item in the mines and then finding the secret black market and buying a really expensive item and then doing a special interaction in the ice caves. And then you go to like the lost city of gold and then you go to hell and then you beat the real secret boss. And like, it's a ton of effort. And like, I did it once and it was really cool, but like, I need to do it again. but you get to the last boss in the temple, and this last boss is actually probably the thing I have the most problem with in Spelunky.
Oh.
He is Olmec, and he is a big head. Have you ever seen the episode of The Simpsons Blood Feud where Bart donates blood to Mr. Burns, and then Mr. Burns finally rewards him with a big, Mayan head?
I was thinking either that or Olmec from Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah. Oh, they're... There we go. Yeah.
But he's like a big, like, I don't know,
stone head.
Yeah, he's a big stone head.
Well, gold head, I guess.
Gold. Okay.
And you walk into Olmec's lair and he's being worshipped by these cavemen, and then he goes bananas like all giant gold heads do and starts like crushing them. And then like he just starts moving around this arena, crushing the arena and destroying it. And crucially, below this arena is a lava pit.
Yeah.
So you're running out of space to you know, and none of your bombs aren't going to do anything.
Well, your bombs don't hurt Olmec, but you can use them to blow out the ground under.
Yeah, So like
it's sort of a Super Mario Brothers 3 Bowser fight type situation.
Yes. And I forget if like if there's any indication where or yeah. So there's a standard exit to this level, which is just on the other side of the level, same side that you came in on, kind of, or the same elevation, I guess. Olmec like digs his own grave, literally falls into the lava, and you're like, oh, hooray! The exit's open. You come in, and you get all the gold, and then you leave the temple. Or no, it's
you loot all the valuable artifacts, and you take them across the world to be put on display in an act of terror and colonialism, the likes of which no one has ever seen in such a cute sprite.
And then he gives you a cute thumbs up at the end. That is a complete run of Spelunky, and a run of Spelunky is pretty fast. Like
in theory, you can beat it in like 3 minutes.
Yeah, 20-30 minutes should be fine, which I appreciate, being as there is so much stuff that can kind of punt your run, and so like the level of frustration that would be a part of it if you had a 40-minute run and then died to some random spike trap. I'm not crazy about Olmec, because all he does is he kind of has this upper arc to the left, and then when you get under him, he crashes down. Or he has this upper arc to the right, where if you're under him to the right, he crashes down. And so...
presumably killing you in one hit.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing that's funny, is you can rescue maidens and or pugs and or sexy Chippendale dancers, depending on your settings.
Yes, yes. There are three damsel types in this game,
and they,
which
when
I
you
appreciate.
When you bring them to the exit, they give you a kiss, which refills your health, one.
Gives you one health.
Yeah, you're right. It gives you one health.
No, you said it great. I just wanted to be clear. Like, one health. and that is almost your only opportunity to heal.
But then is funny is by the time you get really to like the second world, the vast majority of stuff just kills you in one hit, because there's spikes or the Yeti caves, you're just going to fall down the pit, or the temple. Yeah, there's just tons of stuff. But like Olmec is this weird sort of balance of being simultaneously boring and kind of feeling bad, because like, I think he's hard. There's a lot of ways to mess up Olmec, like, because if you run out of bombs, you can dig yourself a pit and be stuck and just get crushed.
And it's very unlike any other of the mini bosses that you encounter.
Right.
It's not like a giant spider. It's not a beehive. It's not Anubis.
It's not just a shopkeep Terminator.
Right.
No, it would be funny if there was a shopkeep on this level.
That actually would be kind of cool. Yeah. Well, so many of the bosses in this game, it's basically like the best way to beat them is get jetpack, get shotgun, and just like go to town. Whereas none of those weapons work on Olmec, which I think is smart, except pretty much every time you die on Olmec, it feels bad. Like, not because dying in this game doesn't always feel bad, but you just naturally feel dumb because he has like the most obvious pattern in the world, and you're just like, well, I just screwed up. And like, you never beat him and feel cool. You know what I mean? You can never do like some sweet play that like brought, you know, like dodge something awesome, or I don't know. It feels kind of anticlimactic. And like, I know this game has another route that is a lot, you know, even more intense. But I don't know. This is a scenario where I don't have a better idea. So
that was going to be my question.
Yeah,
I was so worried that, as it turns out, this was a silly worry of mine. I'm like, I'm so concerned that I'm going to beat this game. Yeah, joke's on me. And the ending is going to be anticlimactic. I was imagining just going through the final door and it being like, congratulations, you're in the treasure room. The end.
I mean, that kind of is the ending.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, there is the boss. There is Olmec the boss, which can really be actually quite climactic the first time, because you, it's very stressful because you have gotten this far and you're like, oh, I have made it to Olmec. I don't want to mess up and just get crushed randomly.
I don't want to get domed by this giant dome, right? So are you suggesting, well, it would be better if this was a better designed boss? Presumably.
Yes, I am a proponent of there being some last boss or something like that. I just would like some boss that you felt like had, because the boss...
That doesn't feel good to win. That's Olmec, not great.
And he also basically is the same every time you fight him. Because, like, no matter what equipment you have, like, most of it isn't going to be that relevant, except for the jetpack, which is always relevant.
Yeah, and I feel like it's so different from how you play the rest of the game that it sort of feels out of place. But it almost, in a way, it kind of feels like a relief of, like, the temple. It's like the entire stage of the temple feels like the final boss fight. Where you have the arrow traps from biome one, you have the horizontal spike tiki traps from biome two, you have I forget if there's anything from biome three in there, but like it feels like there, it's like the confluence of all of these other things that you've seen in the game, and now it's like all right, you've seen it before, put it all into practice. This is the run, like this is the grading assignment here.
And level three is kind of like a weird sort of respite. Like, I find level three to be significantly easier than level two.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you. We're getting back to this topic. And Scott was the first to point this out to me, that biome three,
it's pretty
much
chill.
easier.
Well, it's ice caves. Of course it's chill.
Yeah, it's gotta be. It's on brand. Why did they do that?
I think that's a hallmark of a lot of Derek Yu games, where like the first level is like setting your expectation. The second level is like, all right, I'm just going to punch you as hard as I can. Yeah, it is a dick punching exercise. And then the third level is like, all right, I've punched you in the dick a whole bunch. Let's have a smoke break for just a quick second before we get back into even heavier dick punching. And
maybe maybe it's the idea that like he knows that after you fought your way through the jungle, like you're going to be like so on edge that if you got to another like equally hard level, most people would just be like, you know what? Forget it. I'm done with this. But like a lot of times you will beat the jungle for the first time and then you will make it through like most of the ice caves, if not all of them. And you'll be like, I can do this. The end is in sight.
Yeah. If the temple was immediately after the jungle, this game would be a lot less well received, I feel like.
That's probably true.
So what if it were swapped? What if it was first level ice, then jungle, then temple?
Well, I think...
Is that what you mean?
I think story-wise, like, you can't start with the ice caves, just in terms of, like, that would be a weird place to start.
No, I think, like, mines, ice caves, jungle, temple.
Yeah, I think that would work fine. I don't know. Well,
I guess a better question would be, is ice caves actually easier, or is it that you have more stuff by the time you're in ice caves? Like, are they literally the same difficulty, but you're just further in the game?
I think ice caves is significantly easier than the jungle.
But I do think Ice Caves does reward you a lot for being well-equipped. Definitely. Because there are a lot of scenarios where you have to take big jumps. So, like, having a cape or a jetpack or lots of ropes is super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Colin has been sitting stoically like an Olmec head for a while here. So, I just want to ask, like, so was your main bounce on this game, Colin, is that it is just kind of hard and unforgiving, or do you find like the mechanics of this to just be kind of uninteresting?
A little bit of both. I'm generally not, I don't like hard games that are hard just for being hard.
You like platformers.
I'm indifferent. I do not have strong feelings one way or another for platformers.
Okay.
Like
do you like Indiana Jones? Tomb Raider.
Sure. I never played Tomb Raider. I've never played Castlevania. So I'm probably a bad, like, truly not a good platformer enthusiast. But I like them as a delivery vehicle for game. Really liked Dead Cells. So I'm comparing a lot of my thoughts on this were like, I mean, Dead Cells is not the same game at all, but it is a platformer. And the way that I felt when I was going through something like Dead Cells is very smooth, and you feel powerful and fast and fluid, versus this, I just felt bad at video games, and then I'd die, and then I'd restart again, and I'd feel bad again, and it was just very frustrating. And it really, I hated the whip. I hate the whip so much. I could not get a handle on it. And maybe it was the problem was that I shouldn't have been trying to use it as much. But then also just like, I did not find the conceit of the game as interesting. Like, you're exploring a cave and then you get to the end of the cave and you go to the next level.
Yeah. Like, oh no, 100%. Like, this is not a game. Like, I think I really like this game's aesthetic. I think it looks great, but like, it is not like, oh, I want to know more about the lore of the cave. Like, it does.
Yeah.
Dead Cells at least like gives the vibes of like, oh, I'm in this interesting world and there's like weird monsters and sort of weird vibes around here.
And it's interesting that for a game that's like such a titanic mover of the genre, like this is. This, I think, like, Spelunky 2008 and then, like, that building the hype for the 2012 release is, like, new roguedom. Like, before that, roguelike games, like, were not popular. They were not fun outside of, like, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games. Like, they didn't sell well. Like, they were not commercial successes. This was like, oh, hey, what if, like, someone who was good at game design took all of the good parts of, like, these old traditional roguelike games and put them into a fun setting like a Mario game? And I think that, like, there's like an allegory here of like Spelunky being like the titular like zero meta progression like arcade style rogue-like game feels like it's like the nuclear throne to like how Rogue Legacy is like to Enter the Gungeon. And what I mean by that is like Nuclear Throne is like way smaller scope than Enter
Does
the Gungeon.
Nuclear Throne predate Gungeon?
I'm pretty sure it does, yeah.
Okay, carry on.
But,
I'll fact check you.
like Nuclear Throne, way smaller scope, way faster. You die a lot more. There's no meta progression. There's like basically no story. It's like, oh, I've got to go and ascend the Nuclear Throne. Great. Versus like Rogue Legacy and Enter the Gungeon, it's much more progression based. It's a lot more forgiving. More, it's slower. It's, you know, less punishing. And I feel like those have like that style of game is maybe more appealing generally because like that's the draw. Like the draw is like, oh yeah, it'll like it's hard, it's a hard game, but if you stick with it, like the game will just like let you get better at it regardless if you're like a super like highly skilled twitchy gamer or not.
It will just yeah, your character will sort of get stronger, and like yeah. Dead Cells has those elements very much so, because you're continually like pumping souls into the forge, which, you know, keeps leveling up your weapons. Mm-hmm. You're getting new abilities. And for those following along at home, yeah, Nuclear Throne came out 2015. Gungeon came out 2016.
Oh yeah. So, oh yeah. Talk about fact check.
So I would say for me, like I'm probably a bad roguelike player. I am definitely a roguelite of if
sure.
If you know what I mean. Like I play video games to feel like I am making progress.
Yeah.
And you know, the more we've done this podcast, the more I've realized that I don't actually care if I am making progress and getting better. I just want to feel like I'm getting better. Like, you know,
yeah.
There's a subtle difference between them, and you roguelike elements will make it so it's like, boy, you're getting better at this game. It's like, am I? Let's just not examine that too hard.
Woody,
I'm getting
curious.
Further.
That's a really smart observation, Colin. I like that point a lot of like this, because like I think Hades does a really good job of that. It's like by the time you're, you know, 10 or 15 hours into Hades, your character is just more powerful and you feel like you've gotten better at the game.
And you probably have, but
yeah, you probably
have,
but it really doesn't matter because you're getting farther than you did before, and like that's what you care about.
And to your point, Colin, I sat down this morning to try to beat this game, and it took me at least an hour to get to the third biome. I've been playing this game a lot. I feel like I got the movement down pretty good. I feel like I got a pretty good handle on the mechanics, and it's still the first level is still tough.
Yep.
And real quick, just to remind everybody, I didn't beat Battletoads, but I got darn close. I've beaten a number of the like old school Castlevania games. I've beaten Ninja Gaiden 1.
Oh, that game. Oh,
which
that game is so cruel. You talk about a cruel game. That game, you get to the last boss, which is a very, very hard last boss. And if you die, you go back to the start of the level. Not the start of the boss, the start of the level.
Brutal. That is to say, like, I'm not terrible at platformers. This is Spelunky. I've been saying this on our Discord a fair bit, and I've been saying this to just people who I've been
just
talking about this
on
game
the street.
With. You've just been
out there with a sign.
He's been berating his wife about this game.
I walked up to my friendly local barista and I said, so I'm playing Spelunky. And let me tell you, it is absolutely living up to its reputation. That reputation being that it's a bastard of a game. And boy, is it.
Woody, I'm curious, in my opinion. From your perspective, yeah. Like, you are no stranger to these exceedingly difficult games. I did, for the listeners' benefit, Woody and I were roommates in college. And I remember the day when, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure, like, that was when you beat Battletoads from the first time, right?
Yeah, I remember this too. This is a very seminal memory for Scott and I. Is some I beat Battletoads like for the first time, and then I'm like, oh man, I'm running hot. I was so hyped. I remember I ran up and down the hall of our dorm, yeah. And then I'm like, all right, I got to ride this. And then I played Mike Tyson's Punch Out, and then I beat Mike Tyson for the first time,
like in a row.
What do you mean?
Like, back to
you
back.
You beat Battletoads, yeah. And then you immediately beat Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, no, I had to like fight Mike Tyson many times, but like it was the same day.
The
and
same
then I
day. That's what
for
I mean. Yeah.
Same day.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And
then
so,
like, yeah. So and, I was well, running hot.
Yeah. So, but like you have like this kind of intrinsic draw to these very challenging and difficult games.
Sure.
Was that the draw to Spelunky at the time? It was like, oh, this is like another legendarily difficult Battletoads level game. I need to summit that mountain. Like, was
no,
that at the time the draw?
I didn't know that because, like, when I first played it, because, like, it hadn't developed that reputation. And I guess I don't even think of it that way. Like, because I feel like, I don't know, it's like those games, like Battletoads, like, the difficulty in Battletoads is just bad and busted and, like, doesn't make sense and is not fair. Like I am totally get that, and it's like very much like a smashing your head against the wall and just trying. Like that is the prime example of a game that you memorize. You don't
exactly.
necessarily
yeah.
get
what
good
I was
at.
Talking about way earlier is like you memorize the levels because they are each bespoke designs.
I just started playing Spelunky and just like continued to play Spelunky because like the act of playing it. I found very pleasurable. And then when I died, I'm like, well, I guess I get to play more Spelunky now. and that's not to say there weren't many and still are many memories of very frustrating things about this game. But I guess like it's never felt totally cheap and just cruel the way, you know, Battletoads does.
Mm-hmm.
Just for example.
I remember...
So yeah, it wasn't when I got to the phase of trying to, you know, consciously like beat a hell run to see those more mechanics. That is where it starts to feel more that way. Because like you need things to go right in order for that to work, and like so it can be frustrating when that doesn't work out. But if I'm just playing a run to see what happens and try to beat it. Like, I don't really care. Like, I will, if I see a shop with a shotgun and a jetpack in it, I'm killing that shopkeeper. And, like, I'm going to see what happens.
Nothing personal.
Because I'm not worried about it.
It's just business. Yeah. That business being archaeology.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's be fair. You're tomb robbing. You're tomb raider.
That business being tomb robbery. Yes.
And I guess to me, that's, like, another thing that I just, really respect about this game is like I never noticed its hardness. Like obviously I noticed its difficulty because I was dying all the time and I still do, but I didn't notice it in the same way that I do for those games that like, you know, are quote unquote like the massive, like the games you play solely for difficulty.
Sure, it's difficult in a different way, for sure, in a own uniquely cruel way. No, it's definitely different.
Yeah, and I mean, to me though, that's like that at its core is like what rogue games are about, is that dying is just a part of the game. And like, if the game is intrinsically pleasurable, it does not matter how much you die. Like, if something interesting happens and you had a good time and you like learned one lesson of like I just learned one, like, you can go into one of the bonus levels is you can get sucked in by a big bug and you like go down his stomach and you get like a special knife. For all you guys complaining about the whip, you can get like a crystal knife that has a slightly better range and kills enemies instantly.
Crucially, it's a Chris knife from Dune.
Yeah, because you go into a big sandworm.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, this run is going great. I'm going to go into the alien mothership, another bonus level. And I shotgun down some of these turrets. And then I'm like, what's going on with these turrets? And I hit one of them with my knife and it exploded. which, you know, was maybe as close as I've ever experienced to like, hey, that felt like random BS in the world of Spelunky. But I'm not sure I'd ever seen that interaction before. So even, you know, 50, 60 hours in, I'm still learning new things.
I remember when I first picked up Spelunky, I think it was, this was the very first rogue game I bought on Steam. And November 2013, so the year of release, I think I got it for $4.
Yeah.
And I was like, at the time I was so engrossed in it, I remember specifically, it was the January 4th, 2013 Colts versus Chiefs playoff game, okay, where there was like this, like one of the biggest come from behind victories in playoff football history. And I was just completely ignoring it because I was playing Spelunky on my laptop.
Sure.
I'm like, God damn it, I'm going to beat this level. And I'm like throwing my wireless 360 controller across the room and stuff.
And then threw the himbo into the exit. all right. Anyway, yeah.
But I remember bouncing off of it at the time because it was punishingly difficult. I didn't really understand why it was so lauded at the time. And it took me like until June 2015, scrolling through my Steam purchase history here, to get Risk of Rain 1, which was like, that was the gateway drug. So like, I played Spelunky. I was engrossed in it enough at the time. I didn't beat it at the time, but like, I bounced off it because I'm like, yeah, but it's, I don't know, it's just like another Meat Boy or something.
Sure.
And like, sure, yeah, it's difficult. And I thought at the time, difficult for difficult's sake, but having played enough of these and really thinking about it critically and coming back to it, I'm like, wow, like it's so polished for how pared down it is compared to something. Well, I mean, Noita is also very polished, but like Noita or Spelunky crawled with its belly across the cavern floor. So that way Noita could jetpack across to victory. And yeah, I feel like it's just so foundational, like of opening up the doors to all these systems of like, oh, hey, actually, like these rogue systems from all these like incredibly terse and like 150 keyboard command type games like can actually be fun if you apply it to the right medium. Speaking of run types, so like we talked about a standard run. What do you kind of touched on a hell run, which requires getting like the Wadjet Eye from the mines, the Ankh from the black market, which gives you an extra life, the head jet from
it gives you an extra life, but if you die, it uses the Ankh, and so you can't unlock the secret. So you have to get it and not die.
Well, and then you have to crucially kill yourself next to a giant Moai head in the ice caves to activate it, which spits you back out of the Moai head wearing a cool head helmet that's made of gold.
That's what they call them. Head helmets made of gold.
And then you get you kill Anubis in the temple to get his scepter, which like with all of the, well, actually I think you only need the scepter and the head jet technically. And so there's creative ways around this that I'll get to in a second, but like you use the scepter to as a key to open the golden door in I think the second stage of the temple. To go to the City of Gold, and that's where like you can just get your daily challenge.
Where everyone wears score. Head helmets made of gold. I've been laughing off camera.
So the gold
city just like a treasure like room, or is it actually like a full biome with
it's like stuff. Everything's made of gold, right? And then like everything that you blow up, it's just like it's raining gold and your
there's
crazy.
Head helmets everywhere.
Are there enemies? Are you
yeah,
fighting
there's
things?
Enemies. Oh, okay. Colin, it wouldn't be Spelunky if there weren't
enemies.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Well, that's
I think that was
Andrew's question and also
no, there's no bonus level. Even the bonus levels in this game still kick your ass.
I wasn't sure if it was a transition level between your...
Like a Sonic the Hedgehog, all oops, all emeralds.
Yeah, or like the little in Mario when you're in low, you go down the thing.
This is totally unrelated, but I just would like to encourage your listeners when they're done listening to this podcast, do a YouTube search for Skull Monkeys bonus room song. It's just random PS1 platformer, but it does have the best bonus room music of any game ever.
All right, carry on.
You make it through the City of Gold.
Yeah, so while people are listening to that funky music, you get to the City of Gold. You pick up some sort of like Necronomicon-type tome. If you have that, you beat Olmec. That opens up a secret entrance to Hell, which is like right above the lava zone there. So like you have to bait Olmec to like... crushing down like the entrance specifically like by the lava. Olmec is disposed of. You go to Hell, and it's like, if you didn't think Spelunky was hard enough and you were like, you know what, I want something to just like be so comically difficult it's almost like basically YouTube streamer bait, that's yeah. your Hell option here. You get to King Yama, who I think is maybe a more appropriate final boss design for this game, and he's like 3 screens tall. He has like hands that like remove from his body and fly around. There's like all sorts of different enemies attacking you, and yeah, beating him gives you like, you know, the secret ending and a lot more points or whatever. But but crucially, this ties into maybe one of the like I'm struggling to think of a crazier optional challenge mode in maybe all of gaming.
Oh,
then something called the eggplant run.
Excuse me?
Woody, are you familiar with this?
I'm not sure we are allowed to do this on our podcast.
This is a family show.
The E stands for educational on the bit there. But so the eggplant run is like the history from it comes from like people toying around with the Xbox 360 release and then seeing like, oh, if I take this mystery box from the shop and I sacrifice it on one of the Kali altars, I get this little eggplant. Oh, that's a cute little throwaway thing, whatever. And it's a very fragile little thing that like, if you touch it wrong, it'll explode or like, you know, fall apart. It's like a clay pot.
Oh yeah.
Level of fragility. So, but someone was digging around through files or something and found a thing that's like, oh, there's like this eggplant monster in like the game's files. Surely
I'll
this
bet.
Has to do with something, right? And once the game was released on PC, PC gamers do their thing and data mine the shit out of it find the interaction of the eggplant with King Yama, where if you throw the eggplant at King Yama's face, he turns into a big eggplant where you can just whip him for a one-hit KO and kill him. But the interesting bit about this is how comically difficult it is to do this, because you have to get the RNG in order to get a shop and a Kali altar on the same floor, usually in like the first biome. You pick up like the mystery package, you sacrifice it and hope that gives you an eggplant. So there's already the RNG filter there.
I believe Derek, you have to hire
every so often you'll get shops that let you hire a helping hand, which are like little assistants that follow you around but have absolutely, you know, terrible AI, and as is mostly the case in Spelunky, will cause some accidental chain reaction that makes you die. But because you need to be holding like the scepter to get into the City of Gold, and you also only have to be holding the eggplant to bring it in, you have to like have one of these guys carry the eggplant behind you without letting it die.
Or Woody, if you are Bananasaurus Rex, possibly the best Spelunky player, maybe Spelunky 1 player of all time,
sure.
You do it solo by item juggling the eggplant and all the other items back and forth while ghost dodging. We didn't even talk about the ghost, but like ghost dodging across the map. blowing up two other Kali altars in order to get a ball and chain, where you have like an actual like prisoner big ball like chained to your leg, which is another thing you have to juggle, which will come in, which will be important here in a second. You're making your way to the ice caves somehow. if this wasn't already hard enough, you use the ball and chain to break open the Moai head in the ice caves. And then you, the way that he did it, at least, was to use like the climbing gloves to like climb up against the side of the wall of the ice caves, because there's a bottomless pit at the end of it, or the bottom of it, that will insta-kill you. But if you like climbing wall your way down, the ball hangs down, the ball will get deleted by the insta-kill zone, freeing you.
Oh,
also crucially, the reason why for the ball and chain. So you use the ball and chain to like break open the Moai head, so that way you don't need to go to the black market and get the Ankh to sacrifice yourself. You see, you break open the Moai head using this ball and chain. You dip it down into like the kill zone.
You dip
go
your ball
your way
into
back
the kill
up.
Zone.
Yep. Yes. In order to move the eggplant.
Yes. Yep. And then you grab your eggplant. You. I'm maybe missing a step here in my Google Doc, but you get the head jet through the Moai head, which allows you to carry stuff through subsequent levels. You then go all the stuff through the temple to get the Book of the Dead, the scepter also, and you're juggling all these things. You finally get to hell. You're like cradling this fragile eggplant all the way through this like menagerie of chaos that we've described so far. And then you get to King Yama. Bananasaurus Rex did this with one HP remaining, throws it at King Yama's face, turns him into a giant purple eggplant, and King Yama's like frozen. He can't throw any more spikes and energy balls at you. Just waiting for that whip to just come open and just slice his big juicy eggplant head open. He did it. He posted it to YouTube, and like at the time, what it was called, Twitter, folks, ask your grandpa again. Twitter and YouTube just exploded of like, this was not possible. This was something that the developers said, like, the eggplant run can't be done. They denied the existence of Purple King Yama, even yeah. though they left in the mechanic of the ball and chain blowing up the Moai head, which was unintentional, but Derek Hugh saw it and was like, you know what, that's good, that's like so cool, I'm just gonna leave it in there. And yeah, like that has like entered the lore of like on the level of like those Half-Life 2 gnome runs where people carry the gnome through the entirety of Half-Life 2 to put it in the spaceship or the rocket at the very end. It's like,
yeah, but I describing doing that run sounded like describing a dream. Like a child describing a dream. And then the ball and the lava, and then he climbed up, and then King Yama, and
I absolutely Scott, I cannot think of a more difficult optional challenge mode either. Very impressive. And the name of that player is what again?
Bananasaurus Rex.
Bananasaurus Rex. What a hero. And also, what a hero dev for not patching out that the ability to destroy the head with the ball and chain. Wow.
Well, that is kind of the, I don't know, that feels like once that has happened, like you've reached the outer limits of Spelunky. You have spelunked all that could be spelunked. But like, I'm still perfectly content just like making runs of this game and seeing what kind of stuff happens, and like I'm gonna have a good time. Are you guys at some future date gonna talk Spelunky 2?
You know, we've gotten more requests for Spelunky 2 than one, but I thought it would make more sense for us to cover for the big 75th episode extravaganza.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
sure.
A listener request episode to do, like, obviously doing Spelunky 1 first.
Yeah.
Spelunky 2, like, from what I've dabbled with it, it feels very, it's almost like in a, like if this one that we're talking about right now, Spelunky HD, is the remaster of 2008 one, Spelunky sure. 2 feels like the remaster of the Spelunky HD version, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was super hyped for Spelunky 2 when it was coming out, because I was all in on Spelunky, and I have never quite clicked on it. I have, I think, 12 hours in it. I think I've made it to the third world. It's just the praise that I leveled on Spelunky about, like, feeling like it doesn't have a bunch of extra rules and stuff you have to figure out. Like, Spelunky 2 feels like it has more rules and more stuff you have to figure out, and stuff that kind of just exists in the game to add content. And I'm willing to be wrong now that talking or being on this podcast has reminded me that I love Spelunky. And like, so maybe I will make another attempt to try and crack through that Spelunky 2 wall. Because I'm confident I can get there. It's also weird because I was at the point where I'm like, oh, I can beat original Spelunky like 70% of my runs. And then like I started playing Spelunky 2 and I'm like, oh, I'm just dying in the first world every time again.
It's like riding a bike again for the first time.
Anyway, I'm happy to talk Spelunky 2 for whenever you guys get there. And Colin's like, the cartoon dust cloud where like someone runs away and all that's left is the dust cloud. That'll be Colin when we talk Spelunky 2.
Different. I mean, I appreciate Spelunky, this game.
About it?
I see why people might like it.
Oh, okay.
It does have a lot of systems that seem to interact very well. It's got an elegance to it.
Yes. It is an elegant design
for me. What I'm looking for when I'm playing a video game, for the most part.
And speaking of, before we jump into ratings and similar game stuff here, some community correspondence here. So I put the question out of like, what are people's thoughts about Spelunky these days, and got some good write-ins here. So I'll bounce back and forth between these, but one from cool username 1111 says that
that is cool.
Gold standard for the genre. Every death feels simultaneously utter bullshit. 100% my fault.
Sure.
This one from with a bunch of threes and zeros in his name, but Retro Gamer 83 says, I never liked the game. When I play a roguelike slash light, I'm looking for crazy builds and game-breaking combos. Spelunky never gave me those things. It reminded me more of a 2D Souls-like than a roguelike.
I think that I think there are ways to achieve game-breaking combos. They probably require a level of attention and depth that, is beyond just, like, popping the game in. Like, you can do weird stuff with, like, the teleporter button in terms of, like, blasting through levels in weird ways. And, like, the jetpack and shotgun is as broken as you're going to get.
Like, yeah, but it's not like the Vampire Survivors
no,
level.
No, you're right. It doesn't have that same visceral feeling. Like, as useful and powerful as you feel with the shotgun and jetpack and Spelunky, you know that, like, one random beam or spike is still going to kill you.
Random spike. Yeah, that's true.
This one's a little longer, but I'll end with a shorter one. One from Five Dozen Whales says, Spelunky nails what I think makes a good roguelike. Beginners die every 30 seconds. Experts can win streaks. It's hard, but rarely unfair. When you start, it feels clunky. The delayed whip and bombs seem badly designed. Nailing jumps feels impossible. But as you get practice under your belt, you realize that it's extremely responsive. The controls are some of the best in any platformer. You start feeling like a ninja, bouncing off of enemies' heads into back whips and throwing bombs perfectly. And yeah, you do get spelunked occasionally and die in a way that's not your fault, or that was only barely avoidable. But when that happens, it's usually funny. It gives you a story to tell or a clip to share. You never feel defeated. You feel eager to jump back in. A lot of hard platformers are simply clunky and unfair. They're hard because there's a skill ceiling, not a skill curve. A lot of roguelikes rely too much or too little on luck. Experts might not fare much better than beginners. Spelunky is smooth, fair, and has just enough luck.
I don't agree with all of that, but I do absolutely agree with the controls. This game has some tight controls, and they're difficult to master, but they are more or less predictable and pretty responsive. And I think that is maybe one of the first challenges in this game is mastering just moving around and jumping around and ledge grabbing and
When you get a handle on it, it feels pretty good.
And I'll say from the clipping perspective, like I was doing the daily challenge run every day for the past 2 weeks, just to like, let's just see what happens. I'm not going for a win here. I'm just interested to see what happens. And it has gotten some pretty clippable moments between missing a bat by one frame and then getting killed by the subsequent bat, like 2 seconds later. It's given me like some very type 2 fun clips to share of like getting beamed by impossible to kill shopkeeps, or like cool like ghost baiting and dodging and stuff. And like whenever I'm sharing a clip in the Discord, and like, you know, the Andrew and Colin and maybe Will is watching, who knows, and you know, you're seeing like, okay, the level's starting, this is going to end badly somehow, but how badly is it going to end? And I was watching those clips myself, like back and forth, like the next day. I'm like, okay, yeah, I could have avoided that. Like, that was pretty well telegraphed. There was maybe one that was kind of bullshit, but
yeah, there's some of those clips where it's like you have to do a little bit of CSI work to like figure out, all right, what actually killed you in this
crime
case?
Spelunky investigation.
There's always a logical explanation, but sometimes in the moment, it's like, man, I don't even know what got me.
And this last comment from Fishman465 says, IMO, the game requires the ability to laugh at your own deaths.
Well, that comes easier to some than others. yes, I think everyone would do well to remember their breathing exercises and to remain zen while playing this game. And not to yell too loud, lest you bother your significant other. Hey, cool username, Retro Gamer, Thousand Whales, Fishman. Thank you for your input. Much appreciated. Thank you for weighing in.
I do think a weight is lifted off of the player once you make a successful run. Like once you get through and defeat Olmec once, you're like, okay, you can either be done with it, or you can be like, okay, now I'm just going to play and not get upset and just like see what happens and see what I want to explore and like engage with the weird secrets of this game, because I've beaten it, I can feel content that I have made it through.
Yeah, I think the standard run of this game is fun. There's like Woody and I were up past midnight, I guess technically today, playing some of the co-op, and like, it, you know, the co-op isn't great, but the co-op standard adventure mode is kind of meh. Like the screen sharing feels very
right.
Like,
it's not split screen, so you essentially have to follow one. It's the Tails syndrome. One character has to play as Tails, where they're constantly left behind.
Yeah. Speaking of Battletoads.
It is also it is the Battletoads symptom of if you play the 2-player game, the game is way harder.
Yeah. Because. Yeah, and like Woody, you were pointing out when I was just about to pick up the Anubis Scepter, you're like, maybe you don't want to do that, because as soon as you use it, it's going to attack me. I'm like, oh, okay. That, like, I was simultaneously disappointed, and I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, that does make sense from the game design standpoint of, like, it's going to home in on stuff, and, like, Woody's character is stuff.
Thanks, Scott. That's a really nice thing you said to me. Woody's character is stuff.
Oh, my. But when you found the golden head statue, which one of you wore it? I mean, helmet. I screwed up the joke. Anyway,
head
that
helmet.
Is disappointing, yeah, the head to helmet. Hear that it's not, both players don't have their own screen. I thought just all the players would be running around on their own instance, but sharing the level. Yeah. And that sounded like a lot of fun. You're stuck on the same screen, that kind of,
I'm guessing the game would be way easier in that sense. And probably like that might be like a lot harder to code. So I can't really fault a 2012 game for not having that.
Oh, sure. It's just a little disappointing to hear, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought it could be potentially a very good co-op game. I wonder if Spelunky 2 has
Spelunky 2 has more in-depth co-op features.
Okay.
I don't know
I'm imagining.
Yet,
but... Right. Gotcha.
Woody and I were having a good time in the deathmatch mode of setting 99 bombs and how many wins we could get in, I don't know, 5 minutes or something. When it was like a good zany, like, You're having friends over for a pizza party. Just throw this on and they're just going to bomb each other and have fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
All right. I can dig it. And is there, real quick, is there a mechanic for spawning one player back in?
Yes. When you play the co-op at the start of every level, there will be a coffin where if somebody has died in a previous level, they will get reanimated as a ghost and they can kind of blow things around. But then when you get to the start of a new level and open the coffin, their character will come back.
Ah, okay. Duly noted.
Oh, do we have any more to spelunk, Scott?
That's a great question. I think we've kind of touched on all of the things in my 28 pages of show notes here.
Got good music.
The music is very good. Is really good.
Very good music. Even
the music is something that I can say unequivocally is I thought it was a little repetitive at first, but then I realized that I was wrong.
I really did not like the saxophones in the tutorial, but the rest of the music I think is great.
Yeah. Really good work here by Eric. I'm just going to pronounce his name differently every time. I'll just call him Eric. By Eric, yeah. Who, again, for UFO 50, like, if he doesn't win, like, an actual, like, Emmy or something, or, like, Oscar-level thing for, like, the amount of, like, sound design that he did for UFO 50, I'm going to be real mad. and, yeah, like...
As mad as a shopkeep?
As mad as a shopkeep. I'm
metaphorically,
bouncing off
of course.
The walls.
Bouncing off the wall, hopping mad.
Yeah, I think when we do get to that game, obviously we'll have Woody back on there because you've beaten how many of the 50?
I'm currently on 40 of 50 golds. Ooh. In UFO 50. But we, you know, only about maybe 10 of those games count as roguelikes.
True, yeah. So we wouldn't be playing 50 games. We would be like paring it down, obviously, to what's appropriate here. But
obviously.
Yeah, stay tuned for sure. We talked shortcuts. Yeah, I think... do we want to spelunk into the dark bottomless pit of numbers that we've arbitrarily slapped onto this game?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. We're already in, like, this podcast has been the length of 15 spelunky runs at this point.
Yeah.
I could have died like 20 times in this, more. I did the math wrong anyway.
I'll pick on Colin first because I can tell he's getting sleepy from travel and podcasting from on the road.
Yeah, I'm here. In a hotel room right now.
What a guy.
I'm in central time, so it's 10:40 for me.
Shh, don't dox yourself.
Yes, all of central time America.
Yeah, they know what time zone you're in.
So I feel a little bad. I'm giving this game a 5.7. I feel like there is a lot about this game that is good. I understand why people like it, but I didn't enjoy playing it at all.
Yeah.
And I felt very frustrated while I was playing it. And at a certain point, it was like, I was like, my mouse was hovering over it like the next day. And I was like, this feels like homework and I want to play a video game instead. Yeah. And so I played like Factorio or something, which is literally a game about is homework the game. So I think that's a bad sign for it. There's a lot of stuff that it has. I think all of the aesthetics in it are pretty excellent and they hold up really well. Like it's got like the graphics of it are timeless. The music of it is timeless. If you like difficult games, I would still recommend it to you. If you don't like Dark Souls or hard platformers, I would not.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think this game, you know, it is what it, this is not a game that attempts to be for everyone.
Well, like, yeah, crucially, Woody, before you so excitedly jump into your review, let's have Andrew go with his and then I'll go next. We'll always leave the special guest with the final word.
Wow.
Yes, we want to make sure that
we end on a high note.
Someone with the proper resume gets to say have the final mention about it. Okay, well, hey, Colin, let me tell you gave this game a 5.7. If you just stuck with it for another 22 and a half hours, you might have rated it as high as 5.73. Now, Woody, you haven't been on in a while, but so you might have forgotten that my co-hosts here, they really hoodwinked me. When I first joined, we had one ranking system, and I was like, well, whatever, it's your guys' show, I guess I'll do it. And I started numbering and
all
reviewing.
Of these are also edited out from every episode.
With these wacky wild scores. So no one can get mad at me because they, midway through my tenure here, completely changed the ranking system. And now
they're changing again next week, by the way.
So I just figured I want to catch you up, Woody. So scoring 5.73 points on the Andrew scale, totally arbitrary and to each their own scores, pretty respectable. Right ahead of Dysomancer, right behind Barony. And to me, Barony, what it came down to for my ranking decision was the traps. We complained about the boulder traps in Barony, which of course is a first person dungeon crawler. The boulder in Barony, pretty bullshit. Somehow the traps in this game felt much worse from experience. And the key difference, how I finally came down to it, it's like, well, I'm going to put it in here. Does Spelunky go ahead or behind Barony? Boils down to this. Barony, always often laughing when I died, laughing with delight. Whereas with Spelunky, I was almost always enraged, as my partner can attest to. And that is very much, a personal and subjective thing, of course.
Sure.
And we hardly talked about the ghost. And I do want to mention the ghost really quick. Now, listeners, if you haven't played Spelunky, you might think, golly, this sounds like a dangerous game world. Sounds like there's a lot of pitfalls, literal and otherwise. Just be careful. Just take your time. Slow down. Well, guess what? If you play too slowly, a giant fuck off specter of death appears from one of the sides of the screen and just floats through the level, threatening to insta-give you the moment you make contact with its ample hitbox, I tell you. Now, there were a few instances where I outran the ghost and I did something really cool and clutch where, like, oh, I was running along with like the damsel or the himbo or the puppers, and I was juggling items and I also had the idol, and like that felt really good. But a game like Barony was like full of moments, exciting, fun story moments like that. And for me personally, for a roguelike to be really special, it needs to be an emerging story and excitement. And I did not come away from Spelunky with that many stories, aside from how flummoxed and angered I was by it. But I'm going to keep playing it because some part of me finds it fun. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to jump up the ranking scale here, I was coming into this episode thinking like, okay, we're putting it on the schedule. I kind of have a little bit of an axe to grind of like, oh, maybe Spelunky really isn't as good as I remember, or like maybe it's not as good as like people think it is. So I kind of came in like a little skeptical. I'm like, it's kind of bullshit. I don't know. Like I was playing the daily challenge, like, and I was looking forward to it like every day because I wanted to see, A, could I beat Woody's high score? B, like how far could I get? Like, could I do better than I was before? I was playing it very much with like this arcade mentality, and it was really fun. So for me, Spelunky's landing on my rankings at a 9.1, just behind Inscription and just ahead of Vampire Survivors, in good company, because there's like a lot of other really titans of that genre up there, and I think it deserves to be. I think it has the legacy. I think it has the standing power. I think it is like. We were talking about earlier for like the scope and size of like what it is and what's in it. It just, everything feels so complete. And I feel like there's nothing missing that wouldn't add just more cruft to it. Some bad things, just to nitpick it a little bit. These are all like little minor things, but like you can't pause mid run. I guess like the Steam Deck kind of solves that, but being like, if you got a really good run going, you're like, oh shit, I gotta go to work.
Oh, you mean you can't like exit and come
like
back
like save
later.
And quit. Yeah,
I thought you meant like you can't like press start and pause the game.
No, yeah, you, oh, boy, I sure hope they add a pause button to Spelunky 2. Wouldn't that be great? The learning curve.
Well, it's an old game, Scott.
Yeah. Learning curve, I think, is really steep. Sometimes it like kind of skirts the line between like Nintendo hard and Nintendo bullshit sometimes.
Sure.
The shortcuts, I think, are an interesting system. We didn't really talk much about this, but like the shortcuts, like you, when you end a level, you like you pay off the Tunnel Man in subsequent steps. Like, I think it does a good job of teaching you how to progress through the game. I feel like if there was, so Noita has this like daily challenge mode of like, it just puts you in a random part of the game with random equipment, go to town. And like, I think that's a really great way of learning that really complicated game. I think if Spelunky had something similar, again, it's 5 years earlier, so it's hard to fault it. But I think that would help a lot with like, okay, what about this situation? What are you gonna do? What about this one? Without having to go through the Rube Goldberg machine of death to get there. No cloud saves is kind of annoying, and having to play the tutorial again. This game looks awful on a 1440p monitor. It is a 720p game. It scales up, and again, you can't really fault it from 2012. But at the same time, like, it looks really, really good on the Steam Deck. If you're holding it at arm's length on a small screen, if you are like looking at it in all of its hideous glory on a 1440p monitor of a foot away from your face, you kind of start to see the wrinkles. But you know what? Wrinkles are fine. We're not out here to Botox everything to a smooth bowling ball finish. Spelunky, it kicked off the roguelike renaissance. We have all of the great games on this program that we've done, I think, owe it to Spelunky to kick open that door and start that. There's just enough branching paths to like keep gameplay fresh. It's so smooth and precise. Like the ninja comment about like jumping around feeling like a ninja, 100%. And I think this is a overall a punishing but fair game. I often think sometimes if I opened up like a roguelike arcade like business, this would be like the first thing you see when you walk in. This would be front and center. This, like, welcome to roguelikes. They're tough. They're hard. You're going to dump a bunch of quarters. You're going to dump a bunch of time into beating this game. But it's going to be like that Battletoads moment of victory when you do so. And it's going to be feel real rewarding. And I think overall, it's still fun to revisit 10 plus years later. So for me, a 9.1. Now,
but
Woody.
Is it one of the definitive video games? We're about to find out, Woody.
Oh, yeah. I kind of came in biased. Yes, I think it is one of the definitive video games. I just think that like what you can, it's just so clear of like how much is accomplished with a little amount. And just like, when I'm explaining board game rules to people, and I, you know, so many times I get into this scenario of I'm like, oh yeah, but one more thing, like this, you can't do this, like this rule kicks into gear. Whereas Spelunky, there's that, you know, 2 minute tutorial with the big pictures that tells you what to do. And that basically gives you everything you need to understand the game. Even if there's, you know, a lot more depth beyond that, you don't need it to traverse the caves. Well, so I am not fully educated in this new rating system, but I feel like I can fit my rating into it. Because Spelunky is a 10. Like, I don't know. Like, if you're not going to give Spelunky a 10, like, I don't know what you're saving your 10s for.
Got to make sure we mention that at least once per episode.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll give all those games 10s, too. I'm fortunate to only be on this podcast when I want to. Meaning I only have to play games that I really like, or at least have some sort of vested interest in. And so I love Spelunky. I love it ever so slightly less than Enter the Gungeon because it doesn't have Gungeon still hangs on. It doesn't have
Woody always
that same goofy, totally goofy sense of humor. It just, you know, even though we were kind of calling out games that add 500 new weapons or whatever as a way to fill content, like, I like all the 500 weapons in Gungeon.
Yeah, I mean, it's only bad if you do it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it ain't easy, but, you know, the Gungeon does it.
Yep. And sorry, so, yeah, no, you're good. Spelunky is a game I just love playing, and I'm always so, so impressed by how well put together it is. Yeah, and just in this time of revisiting it after I had gone through what I thought was the end of my Spelunky phase many years ago, I'm just reminded of like, oh yeah, this is one of my favorite games of all time. So thanks for letting me talk about it.
Yeah.
Thank
Similar
you for
games.
coming on.
Yeah, thank you again for coming back for all of the good games.
Similar games, Spelunky 2.
Yeah,
Yes.
that is the first one that I have on there. Spelunky 2, clearly. There is one that, like, if you thought Spelunky was fun, but you wanted more traditional roguelike mechanics in there and more difficulty, then the game Vagante is right up your alley for
How do
being
you spell
punishing.
Vagante?
Vagante. Woody furiously taking notes of more
Yep.
difficult games to beat, of
Okay.
course. There is a game by Kazeware on Steam. A lot of his games look very similar. This is a guy that did Bonerazer Minions, but he also made Spirits Abyss, which has like this really good chunky, like dark Halloween vibed. It's like a Halloween vibed Spelunky almost, which is quite fun. Maybe not as punishing as Spelunky. There's another game that's
Interesting.
maybe like Spelunky in reverse, where instead of going down, you're going up, called Tower Climb.
Not Tower Fall.
Not Tower Fall, Tower Climb, but is filled with all sorts of like those kind of simulationist, weird, deep game mechanics, and flies under a lot of people's radar. Other games that are kind of like similar cave spelunking dungeon games, Catacomb Kids, people like a lot. Cave Blazers, people like a lot. There's one that has really good pixel art called Dungreed. And of course, we have to mention Noita again, because I feel like all the stuff that I like about Spelunky, for me personally, I think Noita does better.
Oh, wow. Okay,
How
adding
dare.
Noita to my wish list.
Wait, you haven't played Noita?
No.
Oh, you have to play Noita. It's
Wow.
absolutely up your
You
alley.
must.
All
You
right.
simply must.
Yeah, Noita, I feel like,
You're gonna like
is
it. Cool.
yeah. Listen to our Noita episode,
I
previous
will.
episode, of where to go to get those workshop mods for making your starting wand home in on dudes to make it a lot easier. Check some of those out. Well, that'll wind down our 75th, big 75. I don't know what wedding anniversary reward that one is, but episode and listener request episode. And if you want to request more stuff,
I'm pretty
other
sure it's the golden head helmet is the
Yeah.
75th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken. That's what you give your beloved. Yeah, thanks for tuning in. Oh, sorry, what else we got?
Send your golden head helmet stories into grogpodzone
Please.
at gmail.com. Our Mastodon is Grogpod. I gave it up dot place. Technically we're on Blue Sky, although I didn't put it on there. Something at Grog. It's one of those weird like mirror things. But yeah, I think everything that I post on Mastodon just automatically gets mirrored there. Grogpod.zone has all of the official, unequivocal, unarguable ratings and all of the other nonsense stuff. The website. Go check that out. But that's gonna do it for a very brutal, hard, titular game of Spelunky. So I thank everyone for being brutalized as a warm-up to be brutalized for our next episode, where I had this one on the schedule a long time ago, and I thought, you know what, it just needs more time to bake, needs more time for me to understand and grok it. I think I grok it now, and it will be fun and interesting to get our Ungabungas in a row and smash some giant dragons and demons, because next episode we are playing possibly up to this point this year, the biggest roguelite, depending on how you define it, game released in 2025 thus far as of August. Slay the Spire 2 is going to come out tomorrow as soon as I see this. I am picking Elden Ring Nightreign for us to play, and
Baby.
it is going to be some jolly cooperation. It is going to be some wild nonsense, lot of dodge rolling, lots of protecting of the flock, and yeah, continuing the maximum level of roguelike brutality by getting good. And as you see in standard Elden Ring a lot, some messages saying, ah, at last, dot dot dot, fort, dot dot dot, knight. But that's gonna wind down our Spelunky episode. Elden Ring Night Ring coming up next. Very excited for that one. But to play us out from here, will be some jamming tunes for you to hold down that sprint button and ready your shotgun as you prepare to fight Anubis in the final temple before the end. Or is it?